This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. It might be hard to imagine a New York City saloon without a haze, but if the smoke-filled bar may soon fade into history. A new law that extends the city's smoking ban to just about any place with employees goes into effect at the end of this month. While the New York City law is among the country's most restrictive, it's part of a growing trend. Places where you once might have expected to find smokers, restaurants, bars, even pool halls, are being forced to go smoke-free. And several state and local lawmakers want to extend smoking bans even further, proposing legislation that would limit smoking on sidewalks, in parks, in some circumstances, even in private residences. Later in the program, we'll look at Major League Baseball's attempts to control the use of two substances, steroids, which are illegal, and ephedra, which isn't, but first the growing application of smoking bans. Are these new restrictions reasonable attempts to protect public health, or do they cross the line? Are you fuming over having to breathe secondhand cigarette smoke, or are you a smoker who wants lawmakers to butt out? Our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now on the line from Sacramento, California, is Assemblyman Joe Nation. He's introduced legislation there that would extend smoking restrictions into multifamily homes. And Assemblyman, thanks for joining us on Talk of the Nation.
Good to be with you.
The legislation, as I understand, that you proposed would restrict smoking in private apartment buildings. Doesn't that cross the line between regulating public and private conduct?
Well, I don't believe it does, and I think the issue here isn't necessarily the rights of the smoker to smoke in their own apartment or condo, but how it affects the people who live next door. Currently, if you are adjacent to a smoker in your apartment or condo, there really isn't anything that you can do to encourage them to smoke less, to stop the drifting and the wafting of that smoke into your unit. This bill would simply allow you the opportunity to sue the neighbor so that they would have to take steps to minimize the drifting or wafting of that smoke into your unit.
Is there any scientific evidence to support the idea that whatever amount of smoke that would drift into your apartment from next door would be significant enough to actually threaten your health?
Well, there's plenty of scientific evidence about what secondhand smoke does. The EPA estimates that it causes about 65,000 deaths per year. And I will tell you that I've heard from a number of constituents and other people throughout California who live adjacent to smokers who have had very adverse health effects, people who have had severe asthma that's gotten worse, people who've actually missed work because they can't escape the smoke from the neighbor next door.
But that statistic you cited on numbers of deaths from secondhand smoke, that's, as far as I know, from people who are smokers in the same room.
That is all deaths from secondhand smoke.
Okay.
And so it would include some of the cases where you'd have someone. I mean, you could imagine if you lived in an apartment building, let's say you lived in Unit 3A and someone below you in 2A smoked, and they smoked three packs a day. That would constantly make its way into your unit, and we don't know what the effects of that are, that specific case, but we do know that secondhand smoke kills people.
How have building owners and tenants responded to your proposals?
Building owners are less than enthusiastic about it because they don't know what they would have to do in terms of enforcing this, and that those are some of the issues that we're still working through. But for the most part, tenants have responded well to this. And what people have said is, and again, I have stacks of mail from people who have said, thank you for introducing this. This at least gives me the opportunity to go to my neighbor and to, threaten to move to court should they not deal with their smoking in a reasonable way.
We have one of your, I'm not sure, where's your district, Mr. Nation?
My district, I live in San Rafael, California, and I represent Marin County and Southern Sonoma counties.
Okay, well, here's someone who's across the bay from San Francisco. Joey joins us on the line. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Hi, good afternoon, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think it's about time. I mean, it's just so horrible to go anywhere where there's smokers. Being an ex-smoker myself, I know that I'm one of the extreme people who find it now vile, but I know that even people who don't smoke are now going back to places where smoking is banned because they couldn't before when there was bars and nightclubs were filled with smokers. And it's just one of the basic principles, your rights end where somebody else's picks up.
So would you support the idea of banning it as Assemblyman Nation has proposed in apartment buildings?
My feeling is, you know, everybody's rights are sacred. You know, your personal rights are very, very sacred. And the last thing I'd want to do is infringe upon anyone's personal rights or civil liberties. But I'm sorry, when you're smoking and it's getting into somebody else's apartment, you're infringing on somebody else's rights, and therefore you don't have the right to do that. If the landlord wants to create an apartment that is, you know, completely sealed, where it's not going to leak or seep into somebody else's apartment, then people can, you know, stay in their smoke chamber and smoke themselves to death, for all I care. But once it seeps into somebody else's apartment or somebody else's life, then whether it be in a building or, you know, even in a park when there's kids playing and there's people smoking and smoke is in the air there, it's, you know, whether it's semi-enclosed or not, I just think it should be a ban on it.
Thanks, Joey, very much. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Neil, could I jump in real quickly?
Yeah.
You had said, do you support banning smoking in apartment buildings? I want to be real clear about what the bill does. The bill does not ban smoking in apartment buildings or multifamily dwellings. What it does is it gives people who are non-smokers the opportunity and legal means to require their neighbors to address the issue of secondhand smoke.
Mm-hmm.
And it does it exactly the same way that we give someone the right to sue their neighbor because they play their stereo too loud at 2:00 in the morning, or because they have barking dogs that won't shut up, or whatnot. And so, what it does is it simply
actionable nuisance. In other words,
exactly, it makes a nuisance anything that destroys the quiet enjoyment of your home.
So obviously, you had Joey's support there in San Francisco. How are you doing in the California legislature?
This is a, I will tell you, it's a bill that is, doesn't necessarily divide along ideological lines. I have a lot of people who have been very active on anti-smoking legislation who generally support it. Some people are concerned about the civil rights implications. They've said, well, can you really tell someone they can't smoke in their own home? And again, that's not what we're doing. We're trying to address, I think, what is a real problem. And I think everyone agrees, everyone I've met with, even the tobacco lobbyists that I've met with, agree that there has to be a way to ensure that an individual in a multifamily dwelling can have clean air.
What about the other ideas that our caller from San Francisco suggested? If this is enacted, would you go further to say maybe we should restrict smoking in public places, parks, sidewalks?
Well, I mean, we actually have a law in California that restricts smoking near playgrounds, near tot lots, and we passed that just last year because kids, we've found that kids are picking up cigarette butts and so forth, and are being exposed to the secondhand smoke there as well. But I don't see any other areas that we need to go. Again, the objective of this is to ensure that someone in their own home has the ability and the right to clean air.
Joe Nation, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
California State Assemblyman Joe Nation was on the line with us from Sacramento. For many people, a symbolic moment in the history of public smoking happened recently. Long after smoking was forbidden in almost every public building in the country, the North Carolina legislature agreed to ban smoking on the assembly floor. The author of that bill is Representative Alma Adams, and she joins us now by phone from Greensboro, North Carolina, and it's good of you to be with us today.
Thank you very much. It's good to be on.
Well, what motivated you to propose this rule change?
Well, I just got tired of inhaling it, actually. I also know that many of my colleagues suffer from ailments, asthma, those kinds of things, and it was just becoming unbearable. Also, we have a number of children who come to the General Assembly every day, who sit in the galleries and watch us, and I don't know that that's a good role model for them. But primarily, I wanted to create a work environment when we vote in our chamber, we must sit at our seats, and we're very close with our seatmates, and if you have a seatmate who smokes, or even if other people are smoking, then it does infringe on your right if you don't want to inhale the secondhand smoke.
Obviously, tobacco is something that's been very important to the economy and to the history of the state of North Carolina, but as I understand it, there are still places in the state capitol building that are you can still go to smoke. Would you propose to expand the ban to those areas?
Well, I think we have to take one step at a time. This clearly was a historical moment, and I think people are getting to the point where we are taking very seriously the health of people who have to work in the same environment. Now, there are some people who would like to do that. I think we need to probably look at restricting some of the smoking areas in our buildings and just providing a place where people who want to smoke can go and do that without infringing on other people. But that's another step for another time. The way I look at it right now, you can smoke just about everywhere in our legislature in both buildings, in the legislative office building and in the legislature building. So we've just taken a small step, but in many ways it's going to help those of us who are workers but who happen to be lawmakers and those who have to visit our chambers.
Are you by any chance a former smoker?
Yes, I am. I smoked for 30 years, and I quit smoking the day I became a member of the American Legacy Foundation board. I'm currently the vice chair of the board. I've served for 3 years, and I've learned an awful lot about the hazards of tobacco, particularly the impact that it has on African Americans and other minorities. So I'm a little better educated, and I'm a lot healthier as a result. I feel better, and I wish I had stopped sooner.
Let's go to another caller. Janice joins us on the line from South Bend, Indiana.
Hi.
Hi.
I do believe that the laws are going just a tad bit too far, and believe me, I am an anti-smoker. I used to smoke. I'm allergic to cigarette smoke. I feel that public places should be non-smoking. I think in terms of housing, it would be better to encourage public housing to possibly have smoking and non-smoking buildings than to pit neighbor against neighbor, and that's my concern. I definitely am thrilled that there's less smoking in restaurants because I'm limited as to where I can go. But I don't want a big brother to step in and make, I mean, we're losing so many freedoms as it is, it seems. I would like not to see us lose any more.
So smokers have rights, too?
They have rights for their own health, but when they're near me, they don't have a right to destroy my health. But I think that we should be able to work a workable solution, like separate rooms in restaurants or separate buildings in public housing.
Alma Adams, is that the situation in North Carolina? Restaurants, do they have to put smokers and non-smokers in different areas?
Yes, they do. Just about most places, you have to provide a place for people to have clean air and to be away from tobacco, to smoke if they choose to do that. And you provide places for people who wish to smoke. So, we're doing that in North Carolina.
Well, Janice, thanks very much for your phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Alma Adams, just quickly, how have other legislators reacted now that the assembly floor is smoke-free?
Well, first of all, let me say that this was a part of our temporary rules, and we're hoping because of the vote that we got, 74 for it, we have 120 members, so it was a pretty good vote. I've had a lot of positive response. There are some people who were not in support of it, but they say that it's because of their allegiance to tobacco. But I think that we have to, in spite of the fact that we are in North Carolina, we do have to protect our workers. We have to protect people's health. And that's the primary issue for me. So
Alma Adams,
we'll continue to get the support.
Alma Adams, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
North Carolina Representative Alma Adams on the line with us from her car in Greensboro, North Carolina. We're talking about anti-smoking regulations. More after a break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later on this hour, we'll check in with reporters at spring training camps in Florida and Arizona to talk about baseball players' use of ephedra and steroids. Right now, we're talking about efforts to make more of America a smoke-free zone. Joining our conversation now is Jacob Sullum, senior editor of Reason Magazine, also the author of For Your Own Good, The Anti-Smoking Crusade and the Tyranny of Public Health. And by the way, if you'd like to join us, our phone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and the email address, totn@npr.org. And Jacob Sullum, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Several studies have concluded that secondhand smoke can cause a variety of health problems, including cancer. Given that, isn't secondhand smoke a legitimate target for regulation?
It depends upon the situation. First of all, I want to point out that there are a lot of uncertainties associated with these studies on secondhand smoke because you're trying to get a handle on exposure to what is a very low dose of the chemicals in tobacco smoke compared to what an actual smoker would absorb. It's very difficult using the tools of epidemiology to figure out whether there's really an effect there or not. If there is one, it is quite small. For example, the EPA estimated that living with a smoker for decades raised a woman's lung cancer risk, lifetime lung cancer risk, by about 19%, which may sound impressive until you realize that the risk to begin with is very, very small, less than half a percentage point. So it's raising it from a tiny risk to a somewhat larger but still tiny risk. So when you try to extrapolate from that sort of study to what happens if you happen to be in a bar or a restaurant where somebody is smoking, it's really very difficult to make that comparison. So the suggestion that you could, you know, potentially die as a result of that kind of exposure really has no basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of Americans, I think the majority, do not smoke. Shouldn't their desire to be free from exposure to, the irritation, even if it's just irritation of smoke, doesn't that outweigh a smoker's rights to light up wherever they want to?
Well, I agree with you that it doesn't really matter how serious a risk it poses, because clearly people want to avoid it, and they may want to avoid it because it makes them uncomfortable, because it just stinks, or because they're concerned about possible long-term health effects. Whatever the reason is, it's clear people want to avoid it. The question is, what do you do about that? Does the fact that you don't like tobacco smoke give you the right to demand that every place you go be smoke-free, including other people's property? And by that, I mean, for example, bars and restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
The bar or restaurant owner decides that he wants to allow his customers to smoke. That's his decision. And then the people who don't like that can choose not to eat there, not to drink there, not to work there. Everybody knows about this going into it. It's not like this has sprung upon anyone, and they can make their decisions accordingly.
Okay, let's get callers involved. David joins us now on the line from Fort Myers in Florida.
Hi there, Neil.
Hi.
Hey, this is a great program, and the timing is great. I just had lunch today at a restaurant that was decidedly smoking, even though we have a new law here in Florida that went into effect January 7th. It was not a bar and restaurant. It was a full-on restaurant. And I've got to tell you, the experience was miserable. But as a consumer, I'm going to exercise my right to just not go there anymore. And that's how I'm going to make my protest. I don't think it really is the decision of government to say that this guy who owns this restaurant has to exclude hundreds of people from eating there every day just because they smoke.
Well, the law wouldn't presumably exclude them from eating there. It just excludes them from smoking there.
Well, it would certainly shorten their stay, and by doing that, I'm assuming it would also decrease the size of their tab. So, absolutely, the restaurant would suffer. I mean, you cannot tell me the restaurant would not suffer from having absolutely no smokers allowed, you know, legally allowed to light up on their premises. It just seems a little bit extreme when we can choose not to go there because it is completely a smoking restaurant. It just really seems like the decision should be up to the individual to, A, spend your money at this establishment, or B, spend it at the one next door that doesn't have smoking, or that has, like we had for years here, a smoking section and a non-smoking section. It really seemed to work out well, the old way, I thought.
Jacob Sullum?
Well, basically, that's the approach that I favor, and I think an example that one of your earlier callers brought up helps to clarify the situation. They mentioned that if you play your music really loud, that creates a nuisance, and it's something your neighbors could legitimately complain about. So if you go, if there's a bar that plays really loud music and it disturbs the neighbors, the neighbors might very well call the police and try to get them to do something about it, and I think that's legitimate. But if they play really loud music in the bar and the neighbors can't hear it, and it's just a matter of it disturbing the people who go into the bar, for example, I don't like really loud music in bars, and it's hard to carry on a conversation. but that doesn't give me the right to demand that loud music be banned, you know, in every bar that I might want to go to, that I get, that I have a noise-free environment in every bar or restaurant.
We got an email from Molly Klein in Blacksburg, Virginia, who writes, I quit smoking about a year ago. The only time I crave a cigarette is when I am surrounded by militant anti-smokers. They are the biggest whiners, she writes. It's the only act of rebellion left since so many people now have tattoos and body piercings. Give me a break. Well, let's get another caller. This is Tim, who's on the line with us from Tempe, Arizona.
Hi there.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. You know, I'm out in Tempe, and they pretty much banned it everywhere, including the bars. And I do frequent some of the bars, and I know they're talking about doing that over in Chandler. And a lot of my smoking buddies, I'm a non-smoker, you know, they're very adamant that, you know, this is infringing on their rights and everything else like that. And, you know, they made the comment, hey, you got a choice. You don't have to come out here to the bars. And I said, well, you know, once they make it illegal, you don't either. You got a choice, too. I don't see what the difference is. And I'm not all that opposed to the secondhand smoke. I think I'm more just opposed to the, I think there's generally kind of an attitude of, you know, I was riding my motorcycle and I get hit by a cigarette butt, lit one. And it's that kind of stuff that just, you know, they've had a lot of time to clean up their act. And every time I look down the street and see all those butts, I know they're not going to do it.
Tim, I know of no law that's been proposed that would prevent people from flipping a cigarette butt out the window.
No, I agree with you. And it's just kind of part of that whole nature. It's just like I say to them, but when they put it on a ballot, what do you think I'm going to vote for when I go to vote?
Yeah. Okay. Jacob Sullum, get a response to that?
Well, you know, obviously there already are laws against littering.
Oh, of course, littering. I apologize.
Yeah,
that is littering.
And you know, I think the caller is making one point that I think is important, which is that smokers are a minority and a despised minority in many respects. And so it's not at all surprising that if you have a vote like they did in Florida, should we ban smoking in bars and restaurants, you're going to get a large majority of people to support it. A large majority of people don't smoke.
Hmm.
So what do they care? You know, that's the question. Why should they care? And the answer is, if you value freedom and if you value the ability of people to live in all sorts of different ways that you may not personally approve of, then you ought to stand up for the right of a smoker to go into a bar with the owner's consent and light up a cigarette. You know, even though you might not want to be in that bar and you might not want to smoke yourself, there are probably things that you would like to do that other people disapprove of.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'll let the majority decide what is appropriate and what is not, and what kinds of amenities and features bars and restaurants ought to offer, and that means that minority tastes and preferences will count for nothing.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you, because I have a general attitude that I don't want to bully people around because I don't want to get bullied around. Again, I feel like I've been bullied around by the cigarette smokers for way too long at this point. So you know where my vote's going to go.
Well, Tim, thanks very much.
Sure.
Wanted to finally read an email we got to Jacob Sullum. This from Jeffrey Logan. About the issue of opprobrium. Now that smoking is not as accepted as it once was, both socially and legally, I found the restrictions imposed actually helped me make that big push to quit. I have quit a two-pack-a-day habit just over a year ago. After smoking for 15 years, I never felt better. I wholeheartedly endorse the heavy restrictions now in place.
Yes, well, I think that points out what I think is actually the main goal of this movement to ban smoking on private property, which is to get people to stop smoking. I think from the point of view of most people, they just want to get rid of the secondhand smoke because they don't like it. But from the point of view of anti-smoking activists and public health officials, the main point of these restrictions is not to protect non-smokers. It's to discourage people from smoking. Because when you think about it, in a place like California or now New York City, If you're going to figure out the logistics of maintaining a pack-a-day habit in a city where you can't smoke anywhere except when you're walking from one place to another, and soon that's probably going to be banned as well, it's very hard to do. And clearly, this is a paternalistic measure that's aimed at protecting people from their own bad choices.
Jacob Sullum, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Jacob Sullum is senior editor of Reason magazine. He was with us from his home in Fairfax, Virginia. And now joining us is John Kirkwood, president and CEO of the American Lung Association. He's with us by phone from New York City. And good of you to be with us today.
Good afternoon.
How do you respond to people like Mr. Sullum, I'm sure you just heard him, who think that anti-smoking laws have gone too far?
Well, I think we have to keep focused on what the most important issue is, and that's public health. And I've listened to part of the discussion so far, which seems to have focused mainly on restaurants. But keep in mind that we're also talking about the workplace, offices, and public buildings as well. And I think the issue is that to the extent that secondhand smoke interferes with someone else's right to clean, healthy air, then it should be restricted. And I think that's what this is all about. It's a public health issue.
It
has been classified as such by a lot of different people, the World Health Organization, the California Environmental Protection Agency, the US EPA, in terms of what the health impact of this is. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about protecting health. We're talking about protecting the health of the majority of people who choose not to smoke.
Is it, as Mr. Sullum said just a moment ago, is the real purpose of these regulations and laws to protect people from secondhand smoke or to really try to convince people to quit smoking in the first place?
No, the purpose of all of these laws is to protect people from secondhand smoke. Smokers are well aware of the health risks that they face from smoking, and in fact, many of them try to quit and are successful. Unfortunately, smoking is addictive behavior, and a lot of people are unable to quit. And the purpose of these laws, though, is to protect others who are non-smokers from secondhand smoke. Now, to the extent that encourages someone to quit smoking, I think that's, you know, a significant benefit. But no, the strategy is not to use this to help people quit. The whole point of this is to protect public health.
Let's go now to Bob, who joins us on the line from Jackson, Michigan.
Yes.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Okay. You know, I was wondering about children that don't have a say in their parents that smoke. And, you know, a lot of times you'll see these little kids in car seats in the back of this car that, you know, you barely even see in there and because both parents are smoking in there. You know, how does that affect them? You know, they don't have anything to – where are they to go? Who's supposed to speak for them?
I can comment on that.
Yeah.
US EPA has done some work in that area. They estimate somewhere between 150,000 and 300,000 lower respiratory tract infections in children and infants under the age of 18 months. And that results in an estimated 7,500 to 15,000 hospitalizations for these kids. So clearly there's an impact on children. Also, children with asthma obviously are at higher risk. And if you have a youngster that has asthma or some type of a respiratory problem, you should not be smoking anywhere around that child.
But, you know, what's the legal situation? Of course, the parents would argue they can smoke in their car.
Oh, yes. Legally, they can smoke in their car. Is that in the best interest of their family? I don't think so, given, you know, these kinds of numbers that US EPA has come out with.
Mm-hmm. Bob, thanks very much.
Thank you.
We're talking about smoking in public places and the trend of laws to ban it in many, many places around the country. On the line with us is John Kirkwood of the American Lung Association. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Now let's go to Rick, who's on the line with us from Boise, Idaho.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Part of the problem, I think, is, you know, litigation and making a law or not a law. This has to do, to me, with rudeness. If someone is getting in my way of enjoying a meal, I've never been a smoker, that has to do with rudeness. If they come in with offensive body odor or they're flatulent at a meal, that has to do with rudeness. Well, secondhand smoke, smoking at a table, to me, has to do with politeness, whether that person respects my dignity in able to eating a meal. I don't say that they don't have the right to smoke. They do. But when they affect my enjoyment of a drink or food, then they're being rude, I think. So I think it starts when you're very, very young. You teach kids that certain behaviors are rude. One of those, which we haven't taught people in the past, is that to smoke in front of other people that don't enjoy it is rude behavior.
Hmm. Is civility, John Kirkwood, enough?
Well, I would agree with the caller's comments, and I think each of us have had our own experiences. Frankly, I have found most people are pretty courteous. Occasionally, you will run into someone that is pretty vehement about their right to smoke, but on balance, I've found people try to be considerate of other people. But at the same token, when you have public facilities, restaurants, or whatever, you really need to take additional steps to protect air quality. Your right to smoke, fine, but your right to smoke ends at my nose, and I shouldn't have to be subject to a possible health risk as a result of your smoking behavior. I do believe most smokers are aware of that now.
Hmm.
Things have changed over the last several years. I think there's a sense now that smoking is really not acceptable behavior, either personally or with other people around. That there's that acknowledgement, and that I think the view of all of this has changed, and in fact that's been manifested in a variety of ordinances and statutes around the country that do restrict smoking in public places and in restaurants, including here in the city of New York that recently passed a total ban in the restaurant capital of the world on smoking, and that ban will be effective very shortly.
Rick, thanks very much. And let's go now to Jenny, who's on the line from Chisholm, Minnesota.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Jenny.
Hi, thank you. We live very near to Duluth, Minnesota, and my husband and I like to go out to eat there a lot. And recently that city just became smoke-free. And up here where it's cold a majority of the year, even when it's closed up and you have separate sides of the restaurant for non-smoking and smoking, it still gets through the, the air systems. And we were amazed at how much better the food tastes without any smokers in the building. And we are much more likely to go visit those restaurants and give them our business now that there is no smoke in them.
John Kirkwood, would you expect the same to happen in New York?
Well, we have seen absolutely no evidence of any diminution in restaurant patronage. I was in Chicago at the time. An ordinance was passed limiting smoking in restaurants. There was a hue and cry that this was going to put restaurants out of business, and in fact, that has not happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think the lady from Duluth is absolutely correct that a meal is more enjoyable. People continue to go out. And in fact, the Restaurant Association, which vehemently opposed these kinds of things several years ago, is beginning to turn around with respect to this type of activity because they are recognizing themselves that there is no adverse impact, and in fact, there may be a positive effect on restaurant patronage.
Jenny, very quickly, can you tell us your favorite restaurant in Duluth?
It's the Red... I can't remember the name. This is crazy. we like a lot of them.
Okay, thanks very much, Jenny.
Is good, too. Thanks.
Appreciate it very much. John Kirkwood, thank you for being with us.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to comment.
John Kirkwood is President and Chief Executive Officer of the American Lung Association. He was with us by phone from New York. When we come back, use and abuse of ephedra and steroids in baseball. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.